It's 8:59, Tuesday morning, time for Musical Musers, brought to us by our good friends at Globe Life. Go to globelifep1.com, see what they can do for you. And also by Mullen & Mullen Injury Law Firm. I'm your host, and we're going to get into the legendary life of Quincy Jones today during Musical Musers. An aside, you just heard Ryan talk about the trade the Cowboys have just made, acquiring wide receiver Jonathan Mingo from the Panthers and a seventh-round pick in exchange for a fourth-round pick. Does that seem really expensive to get a guy who's been a spare wide receiver for a team, the Cowboys, that they're going nowhere, that they've just lost their quarterback, and Jerry says this morning they're probably putting him on IR. Does a fourth-round pick seem a little expensive for that?
Yes.
Well,
what are they doing?
I don't know. It's almost like Jerry's trying to blow the whole thing up.
When I heard a trade with Carolina, I thought maybe Chuba Hubbard.
Yeah.
Okay.
Could use a running back.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so we've got that, and we've got Jerry once again undermining his coach this morning after the coach yesterday comes out and says it's going to be Cooper Rush, and right now we have no plans to play Trey Lance. Jerry comes out today and says Trey Lance will be in the mix. It's just unbelievable what happens on a day-to-day basis with this team. Plenty to get into with David Moore coming up in the Ranch Report here in 30 minutes. Okay, in the world of music, we lost one of the biggest names of all time, Quincy Jones, who passed away yesterday at the age of 91. Legendary producer. And we've all been familiar at one time or another with Quincy Jones, and you know the name, and you know some of the artists that he worked with. But I don't think it was until I watched that documentary, The Greatest Night in Pop, about the making of We Are the World, that I realized what weight Quincy Jones carried in the music industry. Because as Lionel Richie was trying to put this together, got Quincy Jones involved, and when Lionel started to recruit all of these superstars in the world of music, the second he said, Quincy is doing this, they were all in.
Yeah, and that's how they got all those people together, I guess.
Quincy was the guy that got them all together. And that night when they were recording this song, and they are in the room, and you had all that video from that night, when Quincy talked, everybody listened.
Yeah.
Everyone was kind of doing their own thing, and they were, you know, a lot of huge egos in the room. But when Quincy talked, everybody fell silent and listened and did exactly what he said. And it was, I think, watching that made me realize what respect he had in the music industry.
Yeah, and his body of work is just really unmatched as a producer.
Yeah, he, as I mentioned, passed away at the age of 91. He had seven kids, was married a few times. One of his kids, Rashida Jones, is the actress, the famous actress, who was on The Office and Parks and Rec. And she did a documentary about her father about 5 years ago that aired on Netflix. I never saw it, but now I want to go back and watch it. I hear it's really good.
Yeah,
I never saw that either.
And yes, he worked with the biggest names in the business. He started with his jazz roots, working with so many legendary jazz artists and even big band artists, Tommy Dorsey and Miles Davis and Dizzy Gillespie and Count Basie. And then it was when he started working with Frank Sinatra. They had an incredible relationship, such respect for each other, and that really put Quincy on the map. He produced this Sinatra song, and when he was working with Sinatra and had such great success, and Sinatra was telling everybody about this great producer, Quincy Jones, I think that's when he really vaulted into the mainstream.
Yeah.
He's got that thing, kid.
Yeah. And he went on to work with Ray Charles and Ella Fitzgerald and Aretha Franklin. He won 28 Grammys. He was nominated for more than 80 Grammys. Still, the 28 wins is right up there on top of the all-time list with just a few other artists. In 1968, He became the first African-American to be nominated for an Academy Award for Best Original Song for The Eyes of Love from the film Banning. He eventually won a Lifetime Achievement Oscar. He scored more than 40 films, including They Call Me Mr. Tibbs, In Cold Blood, The Out-of-Towners, and the Austin Powers movies.
Oh, that's right.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
And
when you think about it, that sounds
now
like
he
a
has
Quincy,
my respect.
That sounds like a Quincy Jones song when you think about mm-hmm. it.
Yeah, Bossa Nova, I think it was, that he did back in the 60s. They repurposed for the Austin Powers films, and then he did a bunch of more songs for those. As Gordo mentioned yesterday in Muse in the News, he wrote the Sanford and Son theme song. Also a bunch of other TV theme songs, including Ironside and The Cosby Show. And then he got into pop music in the 1980s and in a lot of ways changed pop music forever when he worked with Michael Jackson on the Thriller album. And some of his greatest hits in terms of Billboard popularity or success came with Michael off of that album. So many songs from Thriller to Billie Jean. A lot of Michael Jackson's great hits were produced by Quincy Jones.
Yeah, this is Rock With You. This was, I guess, before Thriller.
Off the Wall.
Yeah, it's such a good record.
Yep.
To me, it's my favorite of Michael Jackson. I think this song is just incredible.
And this was Quincy. He did so many of Michael's big hits. In the 80s and 90s, he got into TV and filmmaking. He co-produced with Steven Spielberg The Color Purple, Academy Award-winning movie. He produced The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air with Will Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Funny show.
So he just did so much, and he worked with so many people. He also had a lot of hot sports opinions. I found this interview when he was talking about his first interaction with the Beatles. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this.
No.
But he said that when he saw them for the first time, quote, they were the worst musicians in the world. They were no playing MFers. Paul was the worst bass player I'd ever heard, and Ringo, don't even talk about it. And he said that he was in the studio with George Martin, where Ringo had taken 3 hours for a four-bar thing he was trying to fix on a song, and he couldn't get it. And he said, they told Ringo, why don't you go get some lager and lime and some shepherd's pie, and we'll fix this. So he did, and Quincy said he and George Martin called in Ronnie Varell, a jazz drummer. Ronnie came in for 15 minutes and tore it up. Ringo comes back and says, George, can you play it back for me one more time? And George did, and Ringo said, well, that doesn't sound so bad. And Quincy said, yeah, MF-er, because it ain't you.
Oh, man. Is this like way early Beatles?
Doubt that story, by the way.
I don't know.
Like, Quincy would say, yeah, because it isn't you.
Well, maybe that, but do you doubt they went and got a jazz drummer to do that?
Yeah, I kind of do.
Really?
I always heard that Ringo was like a metronome. Now, I don't know. Maybe by Quincy standards and being a jazz musician, he just, the way he played maybe drove Quincy crazy or something.
This was very early Beatles.
And I guess I could maybe see way early Beatles. It was like I told you, I heard that those early recordings, that's why they had three different drummers on them.
Mm-hmm.
They had the studio, maybe it was that guy that Pete Best's nephew was talking about, Pete Best and Ringo.
Yeah.
I don't think Pete Best ever played on an album, though.
Well, the early recordings, some of those, like Love Me Do, I think one of those is Pete Best.
Huh.
So he even worked with the Beatles. He worked with
Beatles.
Everybody. It's an amazing list of accomplishments. The music world lost a giant. Quincy Jones passing away yesterday at the age of 91.
What a life.
So ever. But his kids, Van Halen was big. I don't know if they were like the biggest band in the world, but Eddie Van Halen had already reached cult status as far as being one of the great rock guitarists. And he's better than Hendrix and all this stuff. And so when we found out he was on this, that's okay. It's all right. That he also added the dog in Beat It. You can clearly hear in the background.
Yeah, dog happens all the time.
Yeah. But yeah. This was huge. Billie Jean is, I think, one of the most perfect songs ever created. All of it to me, like from start to finish. It's just the best.
I think Donnie got a bigger dog when I wasn't watching.
He did. And so, yes, Thriller sold, what, I think hundreds of millions of copies? I can't even remember the total number. He did one more album with Michael Jackson in Bad. But, dude, just this song, this presence.
70 million worldwide.
Damn.
70 million copies of Thriller.
It's just perfect. And
like the video is perfect.
Yes.
It almost makes you forget about all the kids.
It really does, for real. Like, that song is so, you can keep playing it, Ham. It's okay. That song for sure.
I don't know. I think Dave stopped the music.
There are a couple of Michael Jackson songs where I can turn it off for a second. And this is definitely one of them. I just think it's beautiful. So Quincy Jones, and then 4 years later, who do they get to do We Are the World? Well, of course, they call Quincy Jones. And, you know, we all talked about the documentary. Yes, it could be a punch in the face. But at the time, it was kind of the coolest thing that we could have ever envisioned.
In its day.
Every single person that was in popular music and rock and roll that mattered.
Except for Prince.
Essentially, yes. Was a part of this song to raise money for what was sold to us as people eating dirt. Right?
Yes, famine in Ethiopia.
And quickly about the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. It's a really funny story going on about that because he is the one that got Fresh Prince to do Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And while they were trying to do the theme song for it, Fresh Prince heard it, didn't like it, went to his hotel room and put together that the theme you know as of right now. He wrote it in the hotel room with Jazzy Jeff. Brought it back to Quincy, but he was nervous to present it to him because it's Quincy Jones. Who am I to tell him about music? And when he played it for him, Quincy looked at him and said, it's better than the S I wrote, so yeah, we're going to use it.
And that was one of the first things that he did with his production company was put together the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. All right, he did everything. Lando.
I mean, this is a no-brainer. I think you forgot to mention that he also produced A Hot Daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
And I Elect Yes.
And Rashida, yes. Deej?
Run circles around Phil Lesh. Absolutely.
Okay.
Extremely worthy.
All right.
Yes.
Yeah, he's in. All right, there you go. Donovan, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
The great Quincy Jones is...
I'll go talk to a white woman in his honor.
Let's go do it. Go
right
do
on.
It.
Right
on. We're doing all these movies over the next... decade before he started working in for individual musicians, huge shows, TV shows, movies, over and over and over. Probably the most famous ones were In the Heat of the Night and They Call Me Mr. Tibbs. He was responsible for the Sanford and Son theme. He did the themes.
That's his biggest contribution, I think, to pop culture outside of Michael Jackson.
And scoring movies when they just didn't have black composers scoring music at all. Scoring movies at all. Like, he broke through that.
Oh, and buried it. And from also what I read is that there was no trepidation or hesitation whatsoever with him in the industry. He was so well thought of that, yeah, when people were thinking like, man, do we really want to hire a black guy to do this? Are we going to get some blowback from the board or execs or whatever? No one ever had a problem with Quincy Jones. That he was beyond respected. So in the 70s, he's already Quincy Jones. Like, career defined, it's over. He could have died right then, and he's in several different Hall of Fames. Well, he was asked to produce the soundtrack for a movie when we were kids that I remember being really excited about, and it was called The Wiz. And it was the musical adaptation of The Wizard of Oz.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael Jackson was the star. And
Diana Ross, right?
Yes. And this was pre-Michael Jackson. He was still known as one of the Jackson 5 guys. He hadn't broken out yet. So he's working with him on The Wiz, and doing all the music for it. And Jackson is trying to figure out a producer for his next record, which is Off the Wall. And Jones was like, I know this guy would do it, and this guy would do it, and this guy would do it. And finally, Michael Jackson's like, what about you? And he's like, yeah, sure, I'll do it. And then the Off the Wall songs started
so
pouring
good.
Out.
Off the Wall is such a great album.
Yeah, it is. I don't want to say it made Michael Jackson, because we know what made Michael Jackson, but this helped launch Michael Jackson. And
did
this
you guys
is,
watch The Wiz?
Yeah, boy, you're breaking up really bad, Donovan. I watched The Wiz when I was a kid. I don't remember liking it. I thought it was too weird. Did you guys see it?
I don't think so.
I don't think I've ever seen it all the way through.
I remember it was big news when it was happening, but I never...
I mean, I know he's on down the road.
Yeah, yes. I think it was critically panned. Like, it wasn't... It didn't last very long, I don't think, in the theaters, even though...
Pan?
Pammed. Even though it had Diana Ross, who was bigger than Michael Jackson at the time. So, yeah, this was... Sorry for making you work in there, Pam. That's brutal, I know. So, yeah, Off the Wall sold 20 million copies. This song, I think, is my favorite Michael Jackson song of all time.
It's my first favorite song of all time.
Are you serious?
The first one I can remember saying, that is my favorite song. This is it.
Crank it up. And Jones is responsible for everything outside of the songwriting and the melody, all the instruments, all the arrangements, everything is Quincy Jones.
Yeah, and the fact that this was what, 78?
Yes.
So he,
something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so he synthesized like soul and funk and disco and merged it all together and just created this huge sound.
Yeah. It's incredible. And then he was it. So sells 20 million records. Quincy Jones is suddenly the most sought after guy in music. Beyond just being this jazz aficionado and Sinatra's running buddy and composer and arranger of films and TV shows. Now he is the guy to go to put together albums. And he knew his moneymaker. And when Michael Jackson had the seeds for Thriller, Quincy Jones said it was some of the most inspirational times that he's ever had in his working days, was working on this record, knowing how huge the album was going to be. And as he said in several interviews, there was no doubt. Now, did they know the grand scope of it being the best-selling album of all time and probably never be broken? No, but I think both those guys knew. And Quincy Jones, what do we need to do? Let's call Eddie Van Halen. Let's put Eddie Van Halen on this song.
Yeah.
And didn't get paid for that either, right? I think I remember him talking about that, Eddie Van Halen.
Yeah, and I think it was like two or three takes, him rolling in there.
Yeah, and when Quincy first called Eddie, Eddie thought he was being pranked.
Yes, because how could this ever work? It would make no sense whatsoever. But as kids... Van Halen was big. I don't know if they were like the biggest band in the world, but Eddie Van Halen had already reached cult status as far as being one of the great rock guitarists. And, he's better than Hendrix and all this stuff. And so when we found out he was on this, that's okay. It's all right. That he also added the dog in Beat It. As you can clearly hear in the background.
Yeah, dog happens all the time.
Yeah. But yeah, this was huge. Billie Jean is, I think, one of the most perfect songs ever created. All of it to me, like from start to finish. It's just the best.
I think Donnie got a bigger dog when I wasn't watching.
He did. And so, yes, Thriller sold... What, I think hundreds of millions of copies? I can't even remember the total number. He did one more album with Michael Jackson in Bad, But dude, just this song, this presence.
70 million worldwide.
Damn.
70 million copies of Thriller.
It's just perfect. And
the video is perfect.
Yes.
It almost makes you forget about all the kids.
It really does, for real. Like, that song is so, you can keep playing it, Ham. It's okay. That song for sure.
I don't know. I think Dave stopped the music.
There are a couple of Michael Jackson songs where I can turn it off for a second, and this is definitely one of them. I just think it's beautiful. So Quincy Jones, and then 4 years later, who do they get to do We Are the World? Well, of course, they call Quincy Jones. And, you know, we all talked about the documentary. Yes, it could be a punch in the face. But at the time, it was kind of the coolest thing that we could have ever envisioned.
In its state.
Every single person that was in popular music and rock and roll that mattered.
Except for Prince.
Essentially, yes. Was a part of this song to raise money for what was sold to us as people eating dirt. Right?
Yes, famine in Ethiopia.
And quickly about the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. It's a really funny story going on about that because he is the one that got Fresh Prince to do Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And while they were trying to do the theme song for it, Fresh Prince heard it, didn't like it, went to his hotel room and put together that the theme you know as of right now. He wrote it in the hotel room with Jazzy Jeff. Brought it back to Quincy, but he was nervous to present it to him because it's Quincy Jones. Who am I to tell him about music? And when he played it for him, Quincy looked at him and said, it's better than the S I wrote, so yeah, we're going to use it.
And that was one of the first things that he did with his production company was put together the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. All right, he did everything. Lando.
I mean, this is a no-brainer. I think you forgot to mention that he also produced A Hot Daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
And I elect yes.
And Rashida, yes. Deej?
Run circles around Phil Lesh. Absolutely.
Okay.
Extremely worthy.
All right.
Yes.
Yeah, he's in. All right, there you go. Donovan, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
The great Quincy Jones is...
I'll go talk to a white woman in his honor.
Let's go do it. Go
right
do
on.
It.
Right on. Well, last night it was a romantic night at home for the Sturms as the little lady comes home and we get some dinner.
Uh-oh.
And Justin's gone, so the house is empty. So let's do what...
Little body sushi.
Let's do what they do when nobody's home. Let's watch some TV.
There you go.
Maybe some travel shows.
Yeah.
Where we imagine what we might do together.
Right.
At a time that will never exist.
After you get finished paying for college.
Right, right. And Eugene Levy?
Levy?
Man, I swear, my brain says it's Levy. Okay, I'm going to say Levy. No, it's Levy, Bob. Okay, I'm going to say Levy. No, it's Levy, Bob.
Isn't it Levy?
Pick a lane.
I'm pretty sure it's Levy because I've said Levy and people, it's Levy!
Why are you so stupid on your radio?
It's like, pick a lane, Eugene. Anyway, it's his name. He can do whatever he wants. But The Reluctant Traveler is a show where we knock off on a regular basis because it's just travel porn. It's just beautiful landscapes and beautiful places that you'll never get to. They went to one of the Greek islands, and it looked like the greatest place in the world. And so that's what we might do for 35 minutes before she wanders off and I watch the Mavericks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Before that, though, we're turning on the Apple Plus. So that's how it works at our house, is we start with Apple TV, and then you go through the... Your app to what you're going to watch. And Apple Plus always tries to convince you that, no, you need to watch one of our shows right now.
Yes.
And here's the new hotness, Bob.
Yeah, and The Reluctant Traveler actually is an Apple Plus show. So apparently is Carpool Karaoke.
Oh, my God.
So last night, Carpool Karaoke...
Like independent of the TV show that he did...
He's not even in it. You're speaking of late night James Corden. He is all over the credits, so I'm sure he's making some significant bank. But I guess the new bit is he's not even in it, and we're going to take this person and this person, put them in the car together. They're going to sing. They're going to do some, you know, it's a 15-minute episodes.
But there's not like a host like there was? Okay.
No, it's extremely hit or miss. They had Metallica in the car with some dude from Broadway, I think. And, you know, it's, you know, whatever. Anyway, the episode they were promoting, they weren't promoting the show. They were promoting a specific episode. And it was the same day we did the trifecta for Quincy Jones. And so here is Quincy and Rashida Jones.
They're in the
car? Doing a carpool karaoke. And I'm like...
Like after he died?
Not after he died. Probably not long before he died, though.
I had to think about your question for a second, though. I was like, wait a minute. Good question.
It's Weekend at Bernie's. He had sunglasses on.
Were they taking him to be embalmed?
He was not singing quite as well. No, but I had Quincy Jones on my mind, and I'll be real honest with you. I enjoy the trifecta because sometimes I can feel like one of our young crew members.
Yeah.
In that Corby's telling me about someone whose name I recognize, but don't ask me to write a 200-word paper on him.
Dude, I mean, I didn't know until he died the whole Sinatra thing that he was...
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I learned two things that I thought were not in the trifecta, or maybe they were and I dozed off or wandered off or started playing hacky sack over by my my mic. And the first one was, this is his song that Ham will play for you. It's
my party and yeah.
Did you say that?
No, this was the first song that he ever produced.
This is Leslie Gore's It's My Party.
Right.
I only know this song because it played in my house 1 trillion times in my life. And I think a lot of people our age had parents
absolutely
who were into this period of music.
Bubblegum music.
And I never understood why, if it is her party, why is she crying? And apparently, I don't know, did she get stood up or something?
I don't know the whole story, but I do know that there was, he did a follow-up to it as well. Like, back in the day, you would do the twist, and then let's twist again.
Okay.
And then the monster mash, and let's mash again. You know, you would
follow
up your song with the same song, basically. And so there were multiple Leslie Gore songs following up It's My Party.
Okay, well, that's a...
Did he write it or just produce it?
He produced it.
Okay.
So that's Quincy Jones again. And Quincy had an entire, as you said yesterday, just a Hall of Fame level of production. As an artist, much?
Not much.
Okay.
No.
But he became absurdly rich because, for instance, he had a hand in every Michael Jackson thing, and I don't know what the percentages are, but I'm sure he did so well.
I would imagine he had $100 million minimum by the time he passed away.
So he's a very rich man, and they're kind of going through things, and Rashida knows the name to every song he's produced, and he's even singing, and, you know, they're going through the Michael Jackson catalog and the story about how Man in the Mirror made her cry when she was 5 and whatever. So we get to one particular part that I thought, if I knew who Quincy Jones was, I would have to put this in his trifecta presentation, just because I'll never forget it now. And it is part of his day-to-day life. Do you know one of his real oddities as a human?
No.
He's never had a driver's license.
Oh, my God.
And to hear him tell it, he's never really driven a car. So they're in doing carpool karaoke, so I just spoiled who's going to be driving. It's Rashida, and here is a part of last night's episode that I watched.
Yeah, girl.
This is the first time you've driven in the car with me. Are you excited, nervous?
Yeah, no, I'm not nervous, not with you. If I was driving, you'd be nervous.
I know. Well, you've never driven ever.
Mm-mm.
Ever?
Mm-mm. No, I took lessons. The guy gave my money back. Said we don't need any more idiots on the road.
Listen, if you're cool enough not to have to drive ever, then you've made it.
I got it.
And that's really,
dude,
the only reference to it.
That's like, okay, so my grandmother, when she passed away, we talked about her briefly yesterday, or maybe that was not enough. No, that was definitely not on the air. We talked about my grandma. But she had never driven and never filled up a car with gas when she died. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I think that's somewhat common, but this is way later.
No, this is Quincy Jones, who died, like, this week.
Yes.
Had never driven a car. Now,
does that also not speak to the fact that he has been incredibly wealthy? And, by the way, Newsweek says that he is divvying up his fortune of $500 million to his seven kids.
Now, you're not born that way.
Well, no. But
so he didn't have half a bill the whole time, but apparently
he did very well very early on.
He drove so poorly in his driver's ed class or something along those lines that the instructor said, I'm just going to give you your money back. We have enough idiots on the road. And I think the quote from this story in 1996 is, there will be one less idiot in traffic because he's being interviewed.
Lando, mark that as 329 on the ticket. Oh, were they back?
Oh, we're here. Hello. What?
Okay, we just dropped y'all. Oh, now okay. Y'all are back.
Oh, y'all are on.
Sorry.
So basically, he has always had a town car chauffeur at his disposal around the clock. Now, I don't know what the cost is on that, but at no point in his life did he get behind the wheel and drive on his own to literally anywhere.
Have you guys ever seen his wife, Cheetah Jones? So Peggy Lipton?
Yeah.
That's her as a youngin', I mean, 20-something. She's hot.
And once again,
a hot wife?
Quincy, I was like, have you ever seen her? I'm going to show her to you right now.
So you said he had seven kids.
She is attractive.
How many mommies?
I think three.
Three
mommies?
There
were three mommies, if I read that correctly yesterday.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to take it back. She is fetching.
Beautiful.
She got the whole package.
Although she's also dead.
All right, let's just go to break. Screw it.